Before we begin our second season, we wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the current political moment. To start, we want to state for the record that we both strongly support Black Lives Matter. We also want to be clear that we both take it to be an uncontroversial fact that we live in a white supremacy. This isn't a controversial term in academia, in particular when it comes to critical race theory. It's used to refer to the way that our world is structured, namely that society is built to favor white people. One reason that people resist the term, I think, is that it sounds like we're saying that society is a compilation of white supremacists, as though secretly in our hearts, we actively wish for the dominance of the white race. And that's a very psychologistic way of looking at things and is just inaccurate. Acknowledging that we live in a white supremacy doesn't have anything to do with everyone secretly actively wishing for the oppression of non-whites. In fact, part of the problem is that to white people, the ease we have compared to other races is invisible to us. We don't even notice it, and it seems normal. And just a quick word about privilege. That's not to say that everyone who's white or a man has it easy or is automatically successful. This is a common misconception. We have positive associations with privilege, where often you'll hear people use it in a sentence like, oh, it's such a privilege to be able to do this thing that we're actively grateful for. And so I think part of what trips people up about privilege is that it's not a thing we're registering, and that's part of the problem. What it means is because of your identity, you have had the fewest impediments. That's just a better way to think about it. And it's hard to register because what you don't see is how many more impediments everyone else has because of their gender or their race or their sexuality or their class or their disability or whatever. To begin to reckon with the fact that we live in a white supremacy, we have to be able to question what we see as normal, to question a lot of what we take for granted. That involves a lot of listening, a lot of reading, a lot of watching YouTube lectures and documentaries. We don't have one or two things to unlearn. We have to reorient our sense of the whole picture. That also means questioning which stories we tell and how we tell them. A lot of what we do on this podcast is about questioning the history of male-dominated stories, which mainly relegate women to secondary characters. In the last episode of our first season, we talked about Spike Lee's 1986 film, She's Gotta Have It, and our discussion included mention of the white gaze, which is just as important to keep in mind. Our Western canon has long been held up as significant in part, so the story goes, because it offers a timeless, universal insight into what being human means. The problem is, most of those stories are about white men, and that becomes a problem when we start to see whiteness and maleness as the essential humanity, because other stories seem less universally relevant. How often have you heard a man say, oh, that's a story about a woman, I wouldn't know how to relate to it? Meanwhile, I've never heard a woman say the same thing about a story featuring a male protagonist. What we need to do is question what we find easily relatable, who seems quote-unquote easily likable, and to stretch our imaginations beyond what we take for granted as universal and essential. Women and people of color need to be able to see themselves represented in narratives as protagonists. But just as importantly, white people need to see more narratives with non-white protagonists, and men need to see narratives about women and non-binary people.
Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! In which we talk about Fleabag, season one, episode four.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, you know, you go ahead. See, this is what happens when we turn off our videos.
Oh, I know. No, I was just going to say, shall we go right ahead into what we want?
Let's do it.
Still haven't yet completely found the sound, but I feel like we're in the vicinity of the sound that we're going to completely land on.
I agree.
Have you thought of it at all?
No.
I did, but we went to the bathroom respectively just before we started. I thought.
Excellent. All right. Well, then you can start and I will think. Well, right. I eat my cashews.
Excellent. It is kind of hilarious just because I am an experimental type person. I do actually like that we always forget, but I truly always forget to think in advance. Yeah, what I want right now, I have been doing an hour and 40 minutes most days of this body work called somatic movement. And I have noticed so much sort of so many things loosen and start to move in the right direction in only 3.5 months now, I think. So what I want is to continue to have this really lovely, easy focus that is everyday practice and to continue to enjoy the benefits. And actually, I just wrote a blog post for the Somatic Movement Center, the ones that I took the beginner course with. And I said to them, I said to them, I will have the best body of my life by the time I'm 50. And I just am going to keep doing this every day. So wow. Yeah, I want to just really keep going because yeah, I'm having actually like, honestly, I'm in terrible like pain. I've had 11 days of digestive paralysis. Oh. I'm in crazy cramps. I still feel lighter than I normally do in this space because of this really excellent sort of exercise thing. So yeah, more of that. And I really want to lean into that work.
I'm really glad that you found that.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. And I definitely plan to check that out at some point when I can incorporate a new thing into my schedule. Yeah, but totally. As it stands, I got a lot going on. Okay. So what do I want? God. Well, I mean, it's hard because I was just saying to you, like, I actually kind of, I'm at a point, you know, we're in a pandemic. It's July. I don't know when this episode will come out, probably not till August, but right now it's July. We're in the dog days of summer, really hot and humid this week. And I have to say that I kind of just sensed in my community a sense of unease and like, you know, unrest because we've just like already been in this goddamn pandemic for 4 months. The rest of the time we're going to be in it is like stretching ahead of us and kind of indeterminate. And it just feels kind of like exhausting. And yet like between some iron deficiency and this humidity, I was forced to slow the fuck down this week. And like really just really reach for things that were very simple. And so when we were talking just now beforehand, I said that I just bought the All Souls trilogy by, oh God, what's her name? Deborah Harkness, which had been recommended to me by my friend Susan, who has appeared on this podcast to talk about Gosford Park. She wasn't even trying to recommend it to me. She was just talking about these books. And I was like, are you kidding me? In the middle of July in a pandemic, a book about witches and vampires? Yes. Like, please take all my money. So I want it now. And so I bought it for myself. And I also bought myself an ice cream maker for my cottage.
Ooh, nice.
And I'm going to my cottage this week. And I've got these books. And like, I have to say that as an academic, I do feel pressure, especially as an early, like, you know, graduate student. Not an early graduate student, but an early stage person in my career as I'm sort of trying to make the turn between graduate school and some sort of hopefully academic career, but we'll see. I do feel like all my time needs to be in some way devoted to that. And so I do have like my fun reading right now is A History of Existentialism and Wittgenstein's Biography. Mm. And so which, you know, I'm such a nerd that these are genuinely fun things to read, but also like... sometimes like when it's really hot and you don't have a lot of energy, you just want to read about witches and vampires. So I have that now. And so basically what I'm saying is I don't want anything because I have all the things that I want.
Nice.
I mean, there's loftier things that I want, but like, I just can't even focus on those right now. So suddenly like this realization that I can actually just set my expectations real low and that often that's where satisfaction comes from.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I guess with both of our examples, we kind of want more of what we have essentially. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like we already have this thing. It's more just, yeah, it's like the appreciation of, and then I'd say for both of us more, do you know what I mean? So yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Excellent. Shall we go on to Fleabag? And I will say this is the first time I've taken notes. I feel very fancy.
It's true. I'm usually the one who's taking notes.
Yeah.
And I might have even taken fewer notes than you did. I don't know, but I do have them in front of me. So let's do it. Let's talk about Fleabag.
And how many are there in the first season again? Six?
Six. There's six so, yeah. in the first and six in the second.
Yeah, past halfway. This is the episode that's got the terrific getaway with the silent woman and the better man.
Right. So they find themselves on a retreat that their father has once again paid for, which is what we see in the first episode, right? That he's paid for this like feminism speaker series. And they're on their way to this retreat that is like which is called the Women's Breath of Silence Retreat, which happens to be just across the park from a workshop called the Better Man Weekend Workshop, which we will get to in a minute. Oh, but yeah. And he's bought this for them for Mother's Day, which is, you know, I think a fraught day for the entire family.
And it's kind of poetic that he can't speak to them, and then he gives a gift of a silence workshop on the day that they need to be spoken to the most.
Yeah.
But he means it so lovingly, and it's a pretty good, it's a bit ridiculous, but it's a good thought. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. It's obviously a very sweet intention, if a bit of a kind of like hilarious
outcome. Yeah, hilarious flakitude of the actual place.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, let's just dive into some initial thoughts. Why don't you start? Because you have a million notes. I'm so interested in all
your
notes.
I actually don't even have a million. I just have, I even like in university, I basically always felt like if I kind of basically couldn't remember it, I write down like things that I had to sort of memorize. But on the whole, I'd always want to remember stuff. So anyway, it just was interesting. And also I think I often will watch to really get involved and enjoy. So this process is actually just good. It's just a different way for me to like kind of think about stuff. But I think, you can almost just work your way through the show, but the very first moment of the show, when the sister, who's so serious, was like, nobody can hold a map in their head. nobody. And it's just indescribably funny because you believe so much that she totally believes that in that moment. But it's such a ridiculous statement. And then of course, Fleabag says she can, and then gets it wrong, and then gets it right in the hilarious way they do stuff. But yeah, it just starts with such funny moments that always just gives so much information about both of them in a very short amount of time.
And you're right. And what's funny is, and I'm just sort of winging this because this is a thought I'm just having now off the top of my head, but it's funny because Claire seems to find it actually very difficult to imagine Fleabag's experience of the world.
Yeah.
They have a fight a few minutes later about how Fleabag keeps anticipating her sister's thoughts because she's so able to predict them so easily. When her sister starts sobbing, she makes her sister laugh with some joke about how the grinder for lesbians is called Twatnav. And that is a British joke. So for those of our North American listeners who might not understand, the British GPS system is called SatNav. So that's a pun on SatNav, Twatnav.
Yeah.
If you don't know what twat is, then you should do a Google. So
you should, yeah.
And then she starts laughing and she starts crying immediately because Claire is so repressed and full of feelings that like there's a little bit of a pressure release and then all of the feelings kind of come out.
And this is the first time in the episode, but she pretty much does that again later on too, because she's I guess she's so at the edge that she goes from laughing to crying really fast. Yeah, she's literally right on the edge, isn't she, when they go on this trip?
Yes. Yeah. So then they have that adorable fight and then make their way to the retreat center where Claire is still trying to get the Wi-Fi signal and do work, even though it's a silent retreat that's about, you know, shutting out the outside world. And as they're waiting at the door, suddenly you just hear this man scream in the distance,
"Slut!"
and just Fleabag turns around and is like, "Yes." Like, I just love that. That's one of my favorite moments of this entire episode.
Me too. That's actually one of my notes. I thought that was, I love things I haven't heard before. And that just, that particular note of a joke of someone owning their sletitude like that, I had never seen. So for someone that doesn't laugh so much, although I'm laughing today in the podcast more, I literally laughed at that out loud.
Just, yeah. And also just the way she's not, you know, cause that can sound like a really odd or creepy or threatening thing, and just Fleabag's more just curious about it, about who's screaming sluts at them. And I like that about her.
I do like that about her. Yeah, and actually her curiosity makes a lot of the plot points feel organic. I too, like, you know how when they're doing the outdoor work and she's like, oh my god, this is ridiculous, me trimming grass with tiny little scissors, and then her curiosity gets her to walk over there, but it feels very organic because that is something that she would do. And yeah, I think that's a cool thing about her.
Mm-hmm. The next thing I have here that I think is worth talking about on this podcast anyway, is when they get to the room and she discovers her sister's tiny batteries and Claire's deep embarrassment and shame about having brought her vibrator with her.
I know. She wouldn't even say, remember, she's like, she just her face, she's like, what did she say they were for?
I can't even remember.
But it was, and you see her trying like with 400% with her most earnest lie. Do you know what I mean? Like, you see how important it is for her. But it was hilarious, whatever she said it was for. Yeah. And then the dynamic that seems very sisterly, because Fleabag really does like give her a hard time with stuff when clearly she's already uncomfortable, but it is sisterly hilarious to watch.
Yes. And also just sort of reminded me about, you know, a lot of people's embarrassment and shame about, you know, talking about sex and vibrators and just anything, yeah, public about women's sexuality. And just the way that the Fleabag kind of pokes at that, I always just find very satisfying.
And then the lovely moment when her sister does turn to her, though, and say, this is a thank you, it's a very thoughtful gift, actually.
Yeah. So,
like, it just shows all the levels of those characters and them and their friendship. But when the sister delivers that line, she has a real, like, sort of almost like a chuckle in the delivery. So it's just so interesting how quickly they can, yeah, she goes from, like, literally, like, lying to her sister's face and being so humiliated and then genuinely chuckling, like, a few minutes later. Yeah.
And then the kind of parade also of Claire's cosmetics. was very funny to me.
Yeah.
What's this one for? What's that one for? And she's like, this one's for my nose and this one's for my forehead and this one's for my calves. And like, it's just, it's a parody on the, like, the ways that first of all, women's bodies are dissected and compartmentalized in order to be advertised and sold to. Right. Mm-hmm. And then just the ridiculous, like, as though like the skin on your forehead is really that different from your neck. Is that different from your clavicle or whatever, you know, like that idea that you need to have these very specialized creams for different parts of your body.
Yeah. And then I did like how Fleabag's like, one for my face and body. Cause that's me. I usually tend to have one thing. Now I do have sometimes face and body separate, but yeah, I don't have the million things. And then also with Claire sitting there, remember before they started talking, I think putting the eye cream on, but she's so stiff and she does it like so delicately and specifically and stiffly.
Yes.
It was just really kind of adorable. And again, just a good indicator of her character.
So yeah, then we get introduced to this fucking retreat they're on, which is called the Breath of Silence. And just the way that she says, you know, what is it that the way you need to trap your thoughts in your skull, that not a word must be heard. And you must think of your brain as a thought prison. And just the ways in which it's, you know, I mean, first of all, like, silent retreats are a thing. I mean, as far as I know, they're not often like this, but just the idea of a silent retreat for women. And then just sort of amping it up to the level of absurdity in the way that there is an undertone of, like, sadism and violence coming from the woman who is running this workshop for women, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's very, there's a lot going on in their representation of it that I think is very smart and is very complex and really kind of shows the ways in which often women can internalize misogyny and continue to oppress other women. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with Harry Potter, but it reminds me a little bit of Umbridge, who's a character who comes in from the Ministry of Magic, and she's trying to kind of, you know, impose sort of very kind of literal, like, rule and order and discipline in the school at one point during that series. And she is very much this sort of ugly older woman character who takes real pleasure in forcing students to be silent and forcing them to behave and forcing the rigidity of these rules in a way that is representing something that truly happens.
Yeah. And actually that character at the retreat also has a big fake wart on her face. So literally as what you just said, I think they're like, yeah, they're commenting on that phenomenon in probably in things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I also feel like it's also a really good commentary on the men's groups, the way that they're put together, where literally it's ridiculous. And the guy's like, good job, you're better men, good job.
Well, yeah, so it's exactly the opposite, right? Because when Fleabag goes over to figure out what the fuck is happening, that all these men are screaming sluts, And then the scene we enter upon is some doll of a woman that looks like an enormous Raggedy Ann doll or something. Like, it's not even remotely realistic.
I think it's a blow-up sex doll with a wig and clothes on it.
Okay, so there's, yeah. And it's, like, meant to stand in for this woman at their business. I mean, basically what this is a retreat for men who have, how do I want to put it? Because, okay, you need to cut out some of my umming and ahhing here, but it's like...
Sure.
Men who have exhibited misogyny in a way that needs to be reined in, because it's not disciplined in the same way that the women are being silenced, right? It's kind of creepier than that, because what's going on at the men's retreat is that they're actually being encouraged to say all their darkest thoughts. Their darkest thoughts, which are often like, you know, the doll is standing in at one point for this woman who's like just gotten a promotion ahead of all of them. And so then they're allowed to just scream whatever comes into their hearts at this doll. And one of them's like, who did you blow to get that job? You're a fucking skank. Or, you know, like all these like really misogynistic, like hateful phrases. And then all of their feelings are validated. Mm-hmm. But then the guy's like, what should you say? Like, in other words, like, how do you perform non-misogyny?
Yeah, it's basically, it's as if they got in trouble and they're just learning how to not get in trouble, not change yes. anything about themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then it's so hilarious. Remember the guy just goes, what should you say? You know, good job, Patricia. But like, he says it like he's literally discovered the most amazing piece of information. Yeah. They just do hit the notes really well, where it's like yeah. very earnest.
Yeah,
but so funny. Yeah. And actually, I have heard in parks some men's circles that are kind of similar. Where I don't think they all know, but it seems like they're just trying to unlearn performative things. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of like, yeah, buddy, yeah, buddy, yeah, buddy. Like, and the thing is, I get that support feeling. It just manifests really funny. Do you know what I mean? And then that one with the screaming and that the. Good job, Patricia, gets like this awe as if it's like this revolutionary response. Yeah, and they're also angry. Like they're like, they just come out. So yeah, it is. And I didn't think about how much it is the polar opposite. Like they're like, say whatever you think, whatever stupidity is in your head, say it. I want to hear it. Then we'll applaud you for even just saying those things. How brave.
Yeah, how brave that men are expressing their feelings.
And then, oh my God, we got a good answer. Good job, Patricia. And then, okay, yeah, we're going to be better men. We're better men. We can now think to be better men. So it's just interesting with this tiniest amount of nothing work, there's 10,000 praises.
Yeah, exactly. And meanwhile, you know, like she and her sister get caught like whispering to each other and they're like brought into the principal's office.
Yeah.
You know, like the contrast is just very funny.
And I had never seen a desk as large as that principal's office. I don't know if you noticed it. It was like, it was so wide. So when you sat across from her, it was almost like sitting at a giant dining room table. So it just goes with that same stuff of like, and it was so posh. Like it looked like she was this like, yeah, like almost like a rich old witch. Do you know what I mean? That's like with her big fake wart on her face. And then she's being super needlessly mean.
Sadistic.
That's the word.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she wants them to obey the rules for the rules' sake.
Right? Yeah. Like in this very particular way.
It doesn't seem to actually be about making the women better people. Like at a certain point, it's like about the sadism, but then also just, you know, there's a moment where she and Claire are scrubbing the floor, but like with these tiny, tiny little rags. And Claire looks over at her and she's like, I don't even do this in my own home. And Fleabag is like, basically they're getting us to pay them for the luxury of like cleaning their house. And Claire bursts out laughing.
Yeah.
And then loses her shit.
And then cries.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because if they would really be about helping someone, so even if it's a silent retreat, if someone has a breakdown like that, you just collect them, you take them somewhere else. And even if it's silent, then you sit with them while they cry. Like that's what you do if you really want to like help humanity. And otherwise, and then she got in trouble after that and mm-hmm. almost sent home for essentially having a human reaction to something.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really.
And then, you know, she and her sister have a kind of like fraught conversation after that, because Claire, we find out, this is after the principal's left the principal's office. I don't know what that woman's name is. I don't know if we ever find out what that woman's name is. Where Claire's gotten a promotion that she's not going to take because she has like decided to prioritize her husband over her career, right? Which is the thing women are asked to do all the time and often do without, in fact, out being asked, because they know that they will probably be punished, like not in the same way that, you know, this woman at the retreat is punishing them, but punished in the sense that they can't have all the things. Like they can't just assume that their partner will come with them or value their career enough to make sacrifices on their behalf. So basically Claire is at a point where she realizes that she has to choose between this promotion and her husband.
And it's not even for her husband. Remember, it was like, because he thought that his grown-up son needed her. So it's like a real like malarkey reason. It's not, yeah, anything based in anything real.
And Fleabag is so angry about that, that I take it that that's what motivates her to tell Claire that, I forget her husband's name, how he kissed her. He kissed Fleabag at Claire's birthday party, right? Yeah, because I think Fleabag's trying to drive a wedge there because she's angry that Claire doesn't see what her own husband is like, maybe angry at Claire for not valuing herself above this like douchebag. I don't know.
Because yeah, there's actually 2 points in this episode where she seems kind of almost cruel. I mean, that's sort of on brand, but like, yeah, that time. And then later on when she talks about the statue being stolen, where it does seem like it's extra kind of mean. And I was thinking about that, and it does seem like she wants her sister to like kind of have better and wake up, but it just seems like not the best. It's not executed particularly well.
Yeah, I think it's both caring and mean. Like, it's both of those things, which is part of what I love about this series. And yet it's so earnest. Like, you can see that Fleabag is, like, making a decision to say this.
Yeah.
That is maybe, like, not easy for her, but is in some sense satisfying. Like, there's so much packed into each moment. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it ends up humiliating Claire, right? Because, I mean, that's how I would imagine you would feel when you find out that your husband is kissing your sister and, like, giving you bogus birthday gifts.
Yeah. Oh, his name is Martin. I just saw it in my notes.
Thank you, Martin.
Martin. Yeah, and the stolen, because that actually was even just sort of as an audience member. I mean, I've seen this episode now like a bazillion times. But when she's saying, "Oh no, Martin's been lovely, and that gift is so nice," you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like heartbreaking to have Fleabag say, you know, or the way she brought it in, I guess, was don't put it pride of place when dad and stepmom are there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just came out so sharp. But I guess that is a sisterly thing, and the way that they are in general with each other. And then I agree, it's probably exacerbated by a couple things.
Yeah.
And just more end of the ropeness from both of them from being at the place and being so in such trouble.
Yes.
All having to silently do housework.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think the last thing that I thought was just like really interesting about the episode was the conversation she has with the bank guy.
Yes. It's elegant how it ties back, because you know when he suddenly yelled slut, you're like, whoa. So it's just elegant because then all of a sudden it makes that like almost too much moment make sense and pulls it back down to earth.
You're referring to the flashback to the previous episode where she's trying to get the loan and he calls her a slut.
Exactly. Thank you for clarifying that for the listeners. Yes. Because you know, that was a moment that I remember thinking, oh, that's like just close to being a bit much. Do you know what I mean? And then again, this, when you see him at this resort, it's funnily still like in the same suit. Yeah. I really felt like I was like, it's a genius move because it brings that then completely down to earth.
Yeah. Exactly.
See that it was probably a deliberate move on her part, on her as a creator.
And I just like the way that they then have a real, they actually have a human moment, like an interaction where, you know, he is part of this absurd Better Man Weekend, but then you actually see him as a human being, right? Because he's actually having a moment where not that you want to feel sorry for him, but just that like they have a connection where he says like, I do actually want to be a better man. I just like have made some mistakes. And there's a parallel between them because we don't actually know exactly what mistakes Fleabag's made yet. But like, yeah, when I'm watching this after. Some. Yeah, exactly.
It is interesting too. And I think it was for comedic value, but he didn't say he was going to go home and wash dishes. He said, I want to go home and wash dishes and watch my wife drink out of them. I want to be like, do you know what I mean? So I just noticed that. I was like, just in that same better man category of like, and I think they actually would feel better. Imagine if you never talk about anything. And then even in that weird way, you probably would feel a relief of some kind. You're like, yeah, I'm doing self-help. Do you know what I mean? But meanwhile, it was actually almost heartbreaking when he's like, I just wanted empty the dishwasher and the next morning see my wife drink from that cup.
Yeah.
But it was interesting, again, upon the like third viewing of it, I was like, everything he's saying is as if he doesn't know if it's going to happen, even though they're all his own actions.
Yeah, that's really insightful.
I feel quite certain that Phoebe Waller-Bridge is maestra-ness. I'm sure that's not a word.
Mastery.
Mastery. Mistressery. Yeah. I don't know. Mastery is perfect. Yeah. And then I had a note just again with the richness of stuff. I love the scene with Boo, the flashback scene with the nose and how she says, I always say the wrong thing. It feels so real and it's so funny. And you've all known someone that does that where they say the wrong thing and then you're trying to backpedal and her backpedaling is always so kind of charming and cute and
and you just see these moments of like they're like real friendship moments that just sort of to have a whole history behind them, right? Where like just Fleabag's react, like my nose, like, I didn't say it, I just felt I said that I feel insecure about my face. Well, I didn't say anything about my nose.
No,
like, I said the wrong thing. It's like obviously a pattern between them that goes back for years.
Yeah, well, we even saw it with the shirt. Remember that same thing? She comes out in her own shirt. She goes, that's terrible. You got to take that off. Yes. So you see the examples, but it just, and like the sister, it's got that same like kind of bittersweet thing about it. Like you see all the love and then you see all the realness too. And again, that moment, I just think of it, it literally was, you know, like 15 seconds of a couple of sentences back and forth and you know so much about them. And again, I just imagine an American sitcom with those two characters having a moment and how far it would be from that, what seems like real moment. Like I'm kind of guessing that she actually has a history with that other actress, but maybe they're just fucking amazing. I don't know. You never know. Do you know what I mean? But it's it just shows like so much humanity and so much of the stuff of what, humanness is. I think it's kind of breathtaking.
Ooh, sorry. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's no problem. My,
like, exhaustion from this week. It's like, just these amazingly brief scenes of their friendship. And you get the feeling of their friendship so poignantly from even just, 5 or 10 seconds of a scene.
Yeah. And I feel like I want more of their friendship. Like I just want, like I take a whole season of flashbacks just to see the two of them together, even if it wouldn't even make sense. So, and then, we did have a lot of the same notes. I guess those were a lot of it's so dense, but we picked a lot of the same moments. I just had one more with the ending of poignant moments with Dude of Better Man. And then at the end, when she just said, I just want to cry all the time.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was so poignant. And I feel like that's actually, Fleabag is kind of a liar in general. I felt like that was maybe the first time she was just straight up like speaking the truth. So that just really like struck me as, again, super poignant. Yeah. And then after Dude saying, I'm hoping that maybe someday I might clean something up and maybe, like that, the way you would say stuff. And then she just says this like owning, I just want to cry all the time. So it was a really interesting to hear right after the other fellow. And then the very last moment when she didn't know what to do. And then she called Boo to just hear her voice again. Again, so poignant. And then she said, someone should disconnect that, which is so heartbreaking.
Oh my God. It reminds me, I hope she's okay with me saying this, but I'll maybe like ask her this week.
Sure.
But my mom, there was like a moment, I think it was about a year after my father had passed away. And there was some like piece of paper that my mom was freaking out that she couldn't find and was not quite accusing me of having lost it, but maybe of moving it and not realizing it. And I like didn't know what she was talking about and kind of was, distracted and exhausted. And I was kind of not in a great place emotionally at that point myself either, and kind of snapped at her. And she started crying kind of like uncontrollably. And she said, that piece of paper has the number on it where I can call Dad's answering machine and hear his voice. And in this moment, and then I felt like such an asshole because I was like, oh my God, like I didn't realize that what she was looking for had like that level of like meaning behind it. And that it was just this moment that like totally broke my heart because like, it was like just the last piece of my father, really, that my mom had that she would listen to, I guess, occasionally. And when someone dies, even now, even with all the like fucking phones that we have, one thing that's difficult to describe, but I thought of this as I was watching old Christmas videos with my mom a few months ago on Christmas Day, 6 months ago now, I guess, is that like, I don't actually have a lot of videos of my dad. And just to watch, to hear the cadence of somebody's voice is something that you actually, it can fade from your memory.
Yeah.
Much faster than what they look like. Or like stories that you imagine or you can remember after the fact. Like actually hearing the person's voice is something that kind of you can take for granted and not realize how quickly it fades.
And as you were speaking, I realized I don't have a lot of experience with death, but I did have one creative partner, Cameron Wright, that I did some plays with. And actually, I did start acting with him in high school. So it actually, just over time, I knew him well. And he passed away, and I didn't really think about it until this conversation, but I called his cell phone answering machine and it was hooked up for years. Same thing, just to hear his like answering outgoing. So I feel like that is probably to some extent, yeah, just from what you said, and then also just a common thing to miss the voice.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. And once again, just like, I think it's the episode where Fleabag stole the statue. She says, let me tell you a funny story. And it somehow is still feels funny. And then it was just like, oh, like tragic. And this ending also has that, because there were so many funny moments and you're still kind of in that funny, like it's like you're still running with her. Like she's still got your hand and you're running and it's sort of funny. And then it's like, oof.
Exactly.
And then it goes to that like crazy intense, like, I don't know, like kind of metal music that she's got.
So
it really feels like you're literally on a journey with your intense friend who's having an intense year.
It's just interesting to me. It just strikes me as like maybe significant that the episode about the women's silent retreat ends her calling and he listening to Boo's voice.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I just like, yeah, look, like she's obviously making such thoughtful choices.
Yeah. In the minutia, which is so, and like, I just appreciate that to no end. I love creative partners like that can talk minutia about everything. And then I really think it comes through on the screen and all that is just like, yeah, it's just delicious. Oh
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
So great.
So great. Oh my God.
And we should probably bring someone on to talk about Killing Eve at some point. Because that's for more recent things. Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
A good series.
I would love to. And I was just reminded just when I'm talking about incredible women in this field, I remember we talked about Gillian Anderson, and I can say straight up, I would watch Gillian Anderson do anything. I find her as a performer so breathtaking. And it's kind of cool to think like back in the 90s, I don't normally like shows like this, but the person I was living with, watched the X-Files religiously. So I kind of started to like it. And then I like loved her. I had a crush on her, like Agent Scully. We had cats named Fox and Mulder. and she was always an excellent actress and she had a lot of dramatic weight even in her 20s. And I always saw that. But to have her grow into like such an extraordinary actress, and now I'm literally floored by her doing almost anything. It's just lovely. Absolutely. And I feel like Phoebe Waller-Bridge is already there. And then, whoa, I know I've said this every week, I think, but I'm so excited
just to see what she continues to
do. And maybe she'll do something with Gillian Anderson at some point that'll just like melt. God.
I don't know what'll happen. That'd be too much greatness.
And then I'll finally laugh at everything.
It would be like looking at the sun. Too intense.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, episode 4, another run through Fleabag psyche. It feels like essentially
looking forward to talking about episode 5. Very soon. Now that we've said it,
we've got to get it.
Woot. Woot. We'll get that right one day.
Or we can just continue to get it wrong forever.
Like, we could do a recording that would just be like a generic recording.
Yeah.
But that would be so much more neat and tidy and satisfying to listen to. And really, our series is about women and imperfection. And when you ride-